Blog Talk Radio.
I don't know how well you could hear that, but that was 19 by Paul Hardcastle, and probably not even copyright legal to play it on the show. But with our big audience, surely somebody's going to complain about it. Probably going to get a letter from his lawyer. But Paul, if you're out there, I hope you don't mind us using your song. Welcome to Average Joe Radio. This is Average Joe. Today we're talking about Vietnam, the Vietnam War, and is in our continuation of our Americans at War series. I'm here to tell you, man, this is a tough one. It's probably as tougher than any of the wars that I've looked at. But anyway, we'll get started. But first of all, this day in history actually is related to the Vietnam War as well. In 1954, this day, the SEATO, that's S-E-A-T-O, was established, having been directed by President Dwight D. Eisenhower to put together an alliance to contain any communist aggression in the free territories of Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia, or Southeast Asia in general. Secretary of State John Foster Dulles forges an agreement establishing a military alliance that becomes the Southeast Asia Treaty Organization. So that's related to Vietnam. I was 19. 19. So let's move on. We're already kind of on the subject just by talking about that. Mr. Scott, I see you there. If you want to jump in, just let me know. Just as a preliminary statement, as I usually open with these war history shows, I am not an expert. I am so far from an expert that I don't think you could get there with a rocket ship. That's how far I am. I know a little bit about the Vietnam War, and that's why I'm asking for your participation as a listener. If you were in Vietnam or even served during the Vietnam era, or if you just happen to be a war history expert on Vietnam or just have a lot of knowledge about Vietnam War, I welcome your call, 914-219-0884. Before we get into the details, one thing I usually like to do is talk about, this is the first war, I guess, that we've talked about that I was actually alive during at least part of it. It officially ended, I believe, in 1975, even though American troops had pulled out by 1973. I was born in 62, so that gives me about 10 years of Vietnam time. So thinking back to the 60s when Vietnam was going on, you know, I was just a little kid, and I didn't know anything about, you know, war per se. I was a little kid. You know, we played war games and stuff, but, you know, again, I was a little kid. Did I mention that I was a little kid? But what I do remember is I do remember some of the information being shared on the news. And I remembered when we had our family prayer. My mom and dad were pretty big on having a family prayer every night. And I remember my dad always praying for the quote-unquote boys in Vietnam. Remember the boys in Vietnam. Remember the boys overseas. You know, sometimes he'd say it that way. Or remember our boys in Vietnam. And that was just normal to me. I had no idea really what it meant. I didn't know the reality of the horrible war that was going on and the horrible things that our men were going through. But for those that may listen to this show, I just want to tell you I appreciate you being there, because I know how unpopular it was. And what I mean by that, I know you guys know, or guys and ladies know what I'm talking about, but just for all of the audience, it was an unpopular war. I think in the beginning, Americans believed in the cause, but there was a lot of Americans that did not support it, did not believe it in the cause of us being, you know, policing that area. The soldiers were uncelebrated when they came home, and some were even scoffed at. You know, they were treated very badly. If you remember, or if you've ever seen the footage and parades of when our World War II veterans came home, you know, there was ticker tape parade, the war is over, you guys are awesome, blah, 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 we love you, and we do. The Vietnam guys were not treated that way. 914-219-0884, if you want to call in. Again, anybody can call in, but I especially invite you guys or gals that were either served or know more about Vietnam than me, because that would probably be almost everybody. Another memory I have, I do have an older cousin that was in Vietnam, and he was actually a pilot. He flew a Chinook helicopter. For those of you that don't know what that is, it's those big cargo type double prop helicopters, big honking helicopter. And if I remember correctly, he actually was shot down a few times. Well, we could call it an emergency landing. I see we have a caller here. Let's see who we got here. Hello,
hey, how you
caller.
Doing? How you doing?
Hey, welcome to Average Joe Radio.
Yeah, man, thanks for letting me on.
Yeah, who's this?
This is Naj.
Naj, hey Naj, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good. What you got?
Well, I think well, just going with what you just talked about, people coming back from World War II. The reaction they got from the population as opposed to the people coming back from Vietnam, I think that's kind of healthy. I think it's healthy for a populace to be able to say and discern and say, wait a minute, maybe this was a war of aggression. This is a totally different thing from fighting fascism. And I think some of the stuff is overplayed, like the idea that the soldiers were scoffed at and spit upon and all of that. There were some events that got rowdy like that, but for the most part, people were respectful to the soldiers. They just had a lot of disdain for the administration and, you know, the Pentagon Papers. People were finding out things they didn't know, and a lot of people felt like, you know, their patriotism had been abused because, you know, they were tricked into something. And
right.
when you think about it, after Vietnam, what happens? They immediately get rid of the draft. Why? Because when you have a draft, it becomes really hard to get into wars that the population is not going to agree with. You know?
So, yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that's a heavy point in dealing with that issue, and I think that's a healthy part of a republic when citizens can say, wait a minute, I don't like this action that my government is doing. And then when we consider like things like the domino theory or the idea of policing the world and all of this stuff, that, you know, way back in the day you could tell people things like that. But I think people are way too sharp for that kind of stuff now. And they see through it immediately, and they recognize, you know, what that actually is.
Right, right. Well, Naja, did you happen to serve, or you don't sound old enough to have served? Okay.
No, sir, but I have family members that did, and some that lost their life in Vietnam. So,
right.
I definitely understand the point of the show. And no matter what, when you're a soldier, you're following orders. So that's
right,
one of the
right.
criticism part. That's where you have to do a full stop, where you're like, wait a minute. These are not the people who designed this war. These are not the people who decided this war had to be fought. They didn't fund the war. These are people who went and, you know, put their bodies on the line. So the criticism doesn't go to their door. It goes to the administration.
Right, right. I get that. And I respect your opinion on that. And I agree with what you're saying there. Where are you calling from, Naj?
I'm in Georgia.
Georgia. Did you call in before?
Yeah, y'all were talking about something else then, though.
I think it was the Civil War, right?
Yep, that was it.
Oh, okay, I thought I recognized your voice. Thanks for calling in again. Thanks for listening again.
Yeah, no problem, man, no problem.
All right.
What about you? You were in it, or you had family members?
I actually had a cousin and a distant cousin that was there. I was too young. I was born in 62. My brother almost got in, but he just missed it. He just missed the draft by just a few months, probably. But anyway, well, thanks, Naj. I'm gonna let you go. I've got another caller here, but thank you so much for calling in and listening, and we hope to hear from you again.
All right. Well, put me on mute if you can, so I can listen.
Oh, okay. I'll do that.
Thanks, man.
Take care. All right. Well, Naj, thank you again so much for calling in. We're gonna pick up our next caller here. Okay, let's see. Hello, caller.
Is this Stan the Man?
It is Stan the Man, also known as Average Joe.
Well, Average Joe, this is a commandant, commander, president, you name it. I'm the guru here in Stanley County.
Well, Commander, I was hoping you would call in. I didn't want to make any promises to the audience because I didn't, you know, you never know what might happen. But thank you for listening and calling in. This is Commander Hummel from our local VFW post. He is a Vietnam veteran, and he is a Marine. And you know, once a Marine, always a Marine. And I'll shut up and let you talk, Commander. What you got?
Well, I didn't get to listen to the whole thing that you got going on so far, but you asked the questions. I'll provide some answers, I hope.
Okay.
You know, it's easier to do it that way. You know
what
you want.
Well,
go ahead.
I had to tell the audience from the very beginning, I am really far from being an expert when it comes to the Vietnam War, and I haven't even really given any information as to the beginning of the war, what caused the war, blah, blah, blah. We just been talking about our perspective as to, you know, like when the soldiers came back and if they, you know, that it was not a popular war, et cetera, et cetera. But I was just kind of wanting to get your perspective. That's the reason I'd ask you earlier today, if you wouldn't mind joining us, and just kind of give us a short version of, you know, when you first got involved, and when, and maybe a short version of your service record and all that good stuff. And I hope that's not too general, but just kind of take the mic and go, and let's, and then if I think of something, I'll ask you.
There you go. Well, I started this fun trip experience in 1966, June. Graduated from high school in Middle Pennsylvania, and entered the Marine Corps. Made it to Parris Island to put my feet in those yellow footprints. And 13 months later, I graduated from boot camp, and boom, on my way to ITR at Camp Geiger. And it wasn't very long after that. Well, from June till November, I was in country. When I say in country, I was dropped into Da Nang, South Vietnam. I was ushered down to a place called Chu Lai. We hit the beaches down there on landing craft. And, well, oh, by the way, getting to Vietnam was, I was over there twice. So getting there was probably pretty easy. They made sure I flew. I never got a chance to go on a boat ride.
Oh, really?
So the Navy didn't help me out there, man. It was it was all commercial. I had a critical MOS. I was 0331, which is an end days machine gunner. 0331, you carried an M60 machine gun.
Yeah.
Now picture a 170-pound kid carrying 200 pounds of machine gun and ammo.
Wow.
Plus pack and gear and all that stuff. That kind of gets strenuous. So, well, to make a long story short, we were under the impression at the time that we were in the country to help the South Vietnamese people maintain their independence. Now, they were, it's hard to put it into words, but they were oppressed, and the North Vietnamese were kind of ruthless in their endeavors. They would torture and steal, but then they were fighting for their cause also. So,
right.
You know, it was a double-edged sword when you think about it. And, you know, they always cut both ways. And to be honest with you, we had, I got shot twice and I got bit with a snake. The snake near killed me. I always say it that way because I was close. But it was interesting. I wouldn't want to do it again, but I wouldn't change it either. I mean, it was probably one of the most character-building experiences of my life. And I've had quite a few, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
It was good. War is not pretty. And anyone that tells you it is, or, you know, they think it may be, they're foolish because you have one objective, and that's to stay alive and win. You want to make sure that you kill whatever's out there before it kills you. So it's not an easy thing to talk about, not an easy thing to do. But, you know, I kind of look at it from a different perspective. Hell, I'm a battle-hardened Marine. I had a job to do. Our country called. And unfortunately, you know, when you're young, 18, 19 years of age, you don't realize just what kind of politics are being played behind your back or actually in front of you, you know, and you just don't realize it. It's one of those things that you just have to absorb. But after the fact, and you look back on the experiences and all the things that you feel you have accomplished in your career and life, well, helping those people was probably a good thing. We did a lot of good in the country, and unfortunately, they just left it go. I mean, they gave it back and let the communists take it. Now, Was the communists doing a bad thing? Well, I don't know. You know, it remained to be seen. We were under the impression they were bad people, and they were shooting at you. So guess what? That's what we had to do. We had to shoot back.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Again, just like these conflicts we have going on now over in Afghanistan, Iraq, same thing. We decided to get into this. Not the persons that are in the military, per se. This is a political thing.
Right.
You know, whenever the general population realizes that politics should never, ever, ever play a part in putting men in harm's way, it's because they have no experience at doing so.
Right.
I mean, I can say this with I had to work with these people over the years in my other positions. I got to tell you, I don't feel for any politician whatsoever. I think they are lower than I would want to be in life, and I just don't have any use for them. Now, that doesn't mean I look down on them, but if they were in front of me, I'd walk on them. I mean, I don't know if that
I hear that.
I don't just say these people in Washington and Raleigh. I mean, these are county, local. I mean,
yeah.
They have a tendency to become criminals, and I just don't have any use for criminals. And you know how I treat criminals when I deal with people at the VFW. It's not pretty.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, let me back up just a minute. You mentioned that you landed. Where did you say you landed again in Vietnam?
Well, they flew me into Da Nang.
Yeah.
And then I got a hop over to July, and then we went out on Mike boats and hit the beaches to take an objective. But I was stationed down at July for about 3-4 months, and situated in a little place called PF Hill, an outpost. I was a ground pounder, you know what they call it, a ground pounder, a grunt.
Yeah.
And you're not back in the rear with the gear now. You're getting shot at pretty near every day.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Most people, I'm sure, cannot even imagine what that's like.
No, for 20 some months in that period there, it was constant. You never took the gun or the rifle away from your side, and you know, you're on guard all the time. I mean, it's like when you're playing golf, you got to be hitting every shot perfect all the time. If you don't, it's going to hurt you.
Right.
So
I'm looking at, and I don't mean to keep pounding this, I'm looking at a map, actually, of Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia, and I see Da Nang where you came in, but it doesn't have the name of, what was it you said you took a hop to?
Oh, Chu Lai?
Chu Lai, I don't
see that.
South
of Da Nang.
South of Da Nang?
Yes. And later on, we moved.
That was in South Vietnam.
Yes. South of Da Nang.
Okay.
Probably about 100 miles south of Da Nang.
Okay. I'm with you now. Okay, go ahead.
And then we gave that area to the Army because we had it somewhat pacified. And 196th Light Infantry Brigade took over Chu Lai, and we went up north to Hill 55 right outside of Da Nang. And my job was to run the the land trips between Hill 55, Da Nang, and a little place over in the Laotian Cambodia border called Anwa. It was right on the line. We did a lot of search and destroy into Cambodia and Laos, but we never did that, right? But I can talk about it now because I really don't give a shit if I tell anybody that stuff, you know.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your sharing with us because I know a lot of folks that were there and in other wars, they don't like to talk about it, and I appreciate your sharing that with us, and you know, I know it can bring up some memories that you don't necessarily want to think about.
Average Joe, I got them all the time. So why not talk about it?
Yeah, I get that. I get that. Well, I don't. Let's see. I got. Let me. If you don't, do you mind hanging on for a minute there, Commander?
Go ahead. Go ahead. I got.
I'm gonna pull Mr. Scott in here on the call. He's my my Ed McMahon, so to speak, of the Average Joe show. He's Average Joe Radio. Mr. Scott, are you there?
Am I unmuted at this point in time?
You are, so don't say anything ridiculous. Oh, wait a minute. You always say things that are ridiculous.
Well, it's good to hear the testimony tonight from a well-preserved vet that was over there in 66. I'm glad to hear all of that. Glad he's doing good.
Well, I was 66, yeah. 67, and 68. I spanned about in three different years in that tour. Or two tours, whatever.
I hate you had to, brother. I'm glad you did, of course. I was going to say my only remembrance of that was I was in grade school, of course, and we would write letters to Hanoi to please release POAs, but I think I've said that on this show before.
Yeah.
But that's about as close as I had to get to it. But I appreciate CBS, Walter Cronkite, and Dan Rather. I think they portrayed it as closely as they were allowed
to
at the time.
They did. We never got to see that, but I saw it when I came home here in newsreels and different functions. But we were limited as to what we could see or hear. Our objectives were to fight. Okay, that was number one. And when we did come home, it was. We were instructed to remove your military gear and try to dress as a civilian, okay? Now, take a short-haired kid and long in the 60s with everybody with long hair, freaky-looking, funny stuff hanging on them, and we're going to try to blend in. Now, you know, that's kind of difficult. I mean, even a good camo man, camouflage person, would have difficulty doing that. But, it took a lot of fistfights, and, some of them... They may have even gotten hurt through it. I don't know. I was on the I was on the given end. It's
that's
a Marine thing. We just talk nice about stuff like that.
Paul, did you?
Yeah, thank you for your service. I know that was a weird scene from what little bit I heard from my slightly older peers that had to go, and I missed it by a mile. Thank goodness.
Yeah. Oh, it's not for everyone. When they say they would have liked to have gone, no, you don't. You really didn't want to go. I mean, it was ugly. I mean, let me tell you, you don't eat good. We're not sitting there eating fillets and lobster or anything. You know, you're eating sometimes sea rations. And sometimes you're living out in the bush. We used to do 40-day runs on recon missions, and there were days that we didn't get a real meal unless they dropped in by helicopter. So you're eating maybe dog, wormy chickens, and stuff like that. A lot of rice.
Again, I cannot imagine.
But that's why I'm pretty chunky today because I like to eat.
Well, good.
I can't use that as an excuse.
We're glad you came home.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, Commander, we got another caller here. Let me, if you don't mind, I'm going to pull them in while you're still on, and in case they have a question for you or comment. Hang on.
Certainly.
All right. Caller, are you there? Hello, caller. This is Average Joe. You're the 708 area code. Are you there, caller? Okay. Going once, going twice. Okay, we'll just put him on mute so we won't cut him off. Paul, let me just ask you a couple more questions. And one is, just instead of me going through and just kind of giving the dry details of, you know, my notes here, in the short version, I know that's a big question to say the short version, but what... In your from your perspective, started the Vietnam War, and why did the United States get involved?
Well, the United States has taken on a peacekeeping role since World War II, and we were the dominant persons, I guess, in trying to keep peace throughout the world. Well, you know, these folks have been fighting these wars, both in the Asian theater and over in the Middle East, since the beginning of time. And our involvement there to go in there and impose our kind of lifestyle on individuals who don't who live in a rudimentary life that they don't have running water. They don't have they live kind of like the people in the United States lived in the 1600s.
Right.
It's very remote, and why we would want to do that politically is beyond me. Now, to help people being oppressed, that we're all for doing the right thing and helping people. But you know, when we get involved just to make political statements, I think it's bullshit. But hey, that's just my opinion. And again, I told you I'm not real fond of politicians.
So it's political. Political is really their.
It was political.
Yeah.
And
so okay.
You know,
and I kind of gathered that that's the way you felt, and I agree with you just from what I've read.
Yeah. Well, see, you know, when they got out of Korea, you know, that was like another kick in the face. You go in there,
yeah.
You're going to try to do these right things, all to make some person like feel big. Well, you know, hey, those Koreans didn't want to be. I don't know. I don't know. I didn't go to Korea, so I can't hardly talk about the Korean stuff. But I'll tell
right.
you what, the Vietnamese people, they were very kind to us whenever we were trying to help them. But I don't know what happened when, you know, when the North Vietnamese, you know, engulfed the country. It's just, well, I don't know. I can't answer that. But, you know, all the veterans organizations that we have here, well, I'm just going to talk about Stanley County for a sec.
Sure.
You know, I'm the commandant of the Marine Corps League here in Stanley County. I'm also the commander of the VFW, and I'm the president of all the veterans organizations in the Veterans Council. Now, we get to do an awful lot of good things to help our vets, you know, whether they're Vietnam vets, Korean, very few World War II anymore. And the Afghan and Iraq, we do an awful lot in making sure or trying to make sure that they're as comfortable as we can possibly make them. Now, we don't have a lot of money, but we did manage to gain, you know, to raise some so we can help it in different situations.
Right.
And we do that. We do it well. So, you know, if there's vets out there that are you know, needing help, just even needing somebody to talk to. You got your local post here to come over and talk to some vets. Although,
sure.
I got to tell you, we don't have a whole lot in there anymore.
Right.
You know, when I sit there on a Friday night and look around, you know, there might be four or five Vietnam vets. You know, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the rest of them are, you know, just normal, everyday folks. And we appreciate that, too, but it's just that the veterans, we're dying off quicker than what we want to claim.
Yeah, That's true.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I actually, and it's just one thing I haven't done in this show as things got kind of rolling, I have a document that's from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs that I usually reference on this whole series of America at War that I've been doing on the show. And according to this document, it's just basically some numbers, and this was from 2017. The document was published then. It says that we have 7,391,000 living Vietnam veterans. Would you think that's a fair and accurate number?
Well, from 17 to now, I'd say we're down a million, okay?
Yeah.
Because of attrition. You know,
yeah.
Some of them just died off. there's a lot of folks that come back from the war zone that the wounds aren't visible. Okay, they go into the depression, they go into the Agent Orange factors and things of that nature.
Right.
And yeah, we're losing quite a few. And, we're losing them fast because of the age, but I still feel that they have a surmountable or a great amount of experience to talk about and discuss and help, and that's what we try to do, you know, in our veterans organizations, you know, provide that security, provide that support.
Right.
So,
it's
considered
a
thankless job.
Incredible.
No.
I'm, you know, we, as Mr. Scott said there, and I thank you for your service, but also your continued service. You know, what you do now is voluntary, and you don't have to do it. But, you know, I know you personally, and I know you care about your fellow veterans, and it shows, and I appreciate you for that.
Thank you. We need more people
involved like that.
Yeah.
So short version, we've actually ran out of time, but we had a good discussion going here, so I'm not going to cut us off. But when we as in the United States decided to pull out of Vietnam, do you have a pretty good version of that, why that happened and when it happened? I know that was most likely political as well, but.
It was, and most of the pockets were already lined, you know, with the fun of war, and that means, you know, the money that they can make by supplying all the weapons and the ammunition. We pulled out of there because it was no longer of a big benefit to the United States. Okay, so,
right.
You know, what the hell, let little country go to hell now, you know? And there again, you know, the heartless politician. That's pretty much the way I could put it. You know, I'm trying to be nice about it. You ought to hear some of the words I use. You know, we've done a lot of good things in this country, and we've done a lot of stupid things. And I'm not the guy that coined this phrase, but you can't fix stupid. I mean, we do have a lot of stupidity running rampant, especially in Washington, and the things that they argue about over the very little things that are minuscule that don't mean nothing.
I believe
it doesn't have anything positive in the outcome of what we do and how we do it.
It's always been that way, but it's way worse now. I don't know why.
Well, hey, I know, but it is worse now. I don't know. I guess everybody in the country, whether it be a left or a right, I don't even know what the hell we even call lefts and rights, but somebody has to be the scapegoat. So one will blame the other. No one wants to stand up and say, oops, I made a mistake. Let's fix it.
Yeah, you got that right. Especially
see, they don't want to fix things. They just want to go, well, let's blame somebody else. Well,
yeah,
you know. you know, I take a whole lot of criticism. I hear it whenever, you know, at the post, it's a little smoky in here. Really? But you didn't say nothing about all the good stuff we did, okay? Look, hey, the bar's clean, or the bathrooms are clean, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about the good stuff?
Got the coldest beer in town.
You know that, but.
Yeah. You know, typically on average, Joe, we don't talk about politics or religion, but I'm, you know, what you're talking about there, you're basically throwing them all in a hole, and I can appreciate that, and we can do that all day. I don't like to get into, you know, like you say.
No, I'm not one. Let me tell you the honest to God's. I don't vote, okay? I think that's the dumbest thing that's out there on the docket right now. But because they use that's a carrot and a stick theory, okay? They dangle that carrot on front of your nose so you'll follow that carrot. folks, that's just stupid.
I have to agree. I'm currently agreeing with that.
Yeah. And they keep telling you you're gonna make a difference. No, you're not. You want to change the world? Get out there and do something about it. Don't vote for somebody else to do something about it. Go
act
do
locally.
It. You know.
Think globally. Act locally.
Yeah. Hey.
Politicians are pieces of work.
Work? I call them other things, man.
Well, I know. I caught myself. I know you did.
Well, we're PG-13. You don't have to sanitize it too much.
No, I'm good.
You don't want to hear me talking. That's not fair.
Well, as long as there's no full frontal nudity, we're okay.
No danger here.
Oh man. Well, listen, Commander, do you have anything else you'd like to say? We'll wrap it up if you've got anything else to say, or Mr. Scott, if either one of you have anything else you'd like to say. Or
I was proud to have heard what it did tonight. I can't add anything else. I'm glad to have been here.
Well, I'm going to let it go at that also, because I think we're going to still continue to try to do what we can do to help our veterans here in the county and a tri-county area, too. I mean, I got multiple counties around here. But, anytime you see a vet, you don't have to go up there and give them a hug or anything. But, you know, if you just say, hey, good morning, or Semper Fi or something like that, you know, that's all the appreciation they desire. We never came back here looking for a party, okay, from Vietnam.
Right.
And those guys
right.
aren't coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan looking for a party. You know, they don't need the party. They just want to get out here and be with their family, sit on the front porch, even look at a sunset without bullets flying over their head. and that's all that's required. I mean, taking care of your friends and family, that's the biggest joy and I call it entitlement that we can even imagine.
That's why you went in the first place, I guess, brother.
Well, that was it. We wanted to make sure it was going to continue to be good, you know, and that's why we went over there and, wrote that signature on a blank check, you know, up to and including your life. I mean, very few people. I think there's only 2% of the population that enters the military, and I think out of that 2%, maybe a half a percent is going to go into combat. I mean, there's not many combat veterans. There's a lot of veterans, but there's not many combat veterans. And the combat veteran is the guy that was out there in the trenches. And I'm in awe of them. You know, I'm proud to be one, but you know, I'm also in awe of my fellow brethren. And that goes from colonels, generals, down to the privates, and all ranks in between. We rag on the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Coast Guard. You know what? Hey, I wouldn't go into combat without any one of them. I mean, I want them all.
Right.
Because they're all good.
Well, looking at the numbers, and we'll wrap things up here, but you mentioned about the percentages there. So, looking at my Veterans Affairs document, there was 3,403,000 deployed to Southeast Asia, and out of those 3.5 million, there were 47,434 battle deaths. So, percentage-wise, that's not too bad, but you know, every one of those lives were precious, and had a mother and family that their hearts ached for the loss of those loved ones. But I try to remember those families, the ones that you can't thank the soldier personally, but to thank their family for the sacrifice that they made.
Right.
Well,
we do that, and I think I'm going to have there's going to be a karaoke night at the VFW, and I'm going to present the missing man table for the crowd that night. It's POW Awareness Night. And,
right.
You've seen it before, so you're aware of it.
Yes, I have.
very solemn, and it's very touching. And a lot of people don't realize that we still have POWs in Southeast Asia, as well as in Iraq and Afghanistan, and other parts of the world, you know, from war.